Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Stevie Nicol here in the studio. Wales are going to the World Cup in November after a 1-0 victory over Ukraine. It was an own goal, Yarmolenko getting his head on the end of a Gareth Bale free kick, seeing it end up in the back of his own net that would break the deadlock. Ukraine, though, felt they should have had a penalty 5 minutes before the break. Stevie, where do you stand on that?
Oh, absolute stonewall, 100%. Can't figure out why it wasn't given.
Wayne Hennessy, meanwhile, the Welsh goalkeeper, was fantastic throughout the game, keeping them in it, and they'll be going to the World Cup for the first time since 1958. That is a 64-year hiatus. Well, for on this, let's welcome in Don Hutchinson to the show. Don, this was a fun match, wasn't it?
It was an amazing game, Dan. It was absolutely brilliant. It started really fast. It was like 15 minutes in. There was chances either end. Both teams were playing well. The atmosphere was amazing. It's quite interesting that Wales took the game away from the Principality Stadium and played it at Cardiff City because they wanted a more intimate atmosphere, and it was. It was intimate, it was loud, it was noisy, it was colourful. Both teams played their part. I thought Ukraine in the second half were absolutely brilliant, but there were some brilliant performers. I thought Wayne Hennessy had the game of his career. Gareth Bale said that afterwards. I thought Nico Williams at left-back was outstanding. Ben Davies at the back in midfield. You know, they had players like, you know, Aaron Ramsey, who got on the ball, and they had Gareth Bale, who was electric. It was just one of them days where, yes, they rode their luck, because as Stevie said there, there was a stonewall penalty that Ukraine should have had, but take nothing away from Wales. What a journey.
Is it too easy to say that the crowd had a big influence in this game?
Yeah. Because the biggest influence was the decision that Page made to play Hennessy.
Right.
Everybody thought he was going to play Ward. And all of a sudden, he plays the experienced guy in Hennessy, and he stands on his head. That is the difference here. Yes, of course, having your home crowd behind you. It was a perfect night. Rain coming down, slippy pitch, people making challenges. A good game to watch.
Yes.
But the best team lost.
That's, really?
Yeah, well, as far as football's concerned, Ukraine were the team that I thought were carrying the game. I thought they played the better football. Wales did what we thought they would do. They would try and spoil and try and get things on the break. And that's what they did. Aaron Ramsey could have scored, could have made it 2-0, would have finished it. But as I said, as far as a game of football, you came with the better side. And just look at the stats, that tells you.
If this was a boxing match, Stephen?
Correct, if it was a boxing match, it may have been stopped.
But Stevie's right in the sense, obviously, Wayne Hennessy, a massive influence, but the officials as well, Don, you mention it. It's so weird watching that back and thinking that nobody thought, you know what, maybe we should send Matteo Lajos to the monitor to check this one out. Mm.
I agree, Dan, because I've been in both camps, I'm sure Stevie has as well, where you're a defender and you're a little bit sort of sleeping and you're not sure what pass you're going to sort of try and play forward, and you get caught and you daydream, and all of a sudden, you know, Yarmolenko nips in front and just gets a toe, and then the connection is on the Achilles. I mean, it's clever from Yarmolenko because he knows Joe Allen's daydreaming. He knows he was just about to take his strike to clear it, but he sort of paused. And how the referee never seen it, that's one thing, but you understand it because it's difficult on the angles that the referees have got. But when VAR's sitting there and they've got two or three looks at it, anyone that's, and I hate using this sort of phrase, but anyone that's played the game knows that that's a foul. It's 100% a penalty. It's so clear. And they can hide behind the sort of, it's not clear and obvious. It is clear and obvious. It was a penalty.
Is there any sort of argument to say, yes, but he's already got his leg back, he's already going through to kick the ball. It's not really his fault that Yarmolenko's got in the way?
No, not really, Dan, because, as I said before, you know, having been in both camps there, if you're Joe Allen, you're just about to find your forward pass, but he paused. And then if I'm Yarmolenko, I'm thinking, oh, I can nip in here. And then as soon as you nip in and take that touch, he follows through and kicks you on the back of the Achilles, back of the ankle. I mean, I don't know what Stevie thinks, but I think it's a 100% penalty. I don't think there's any excuse for the officials not to sort of look at the rule book there and think, well, that's not clear and obvious. It is. It's so obvious.
I'm dumbfounded how an official could look at that and think that's okay.
Right.
But then I shouldn't be, because when I was coaching, I had a similar incident where it was clear and obvious. And what I was told is that it wasn't a penalty. And the reason it wasn't a penalty is because my player didn't know the attacker was there.
Okay.
So if that's coming from a referees committee, then maybe some of these guys in this VAR booth were thinking the same thing.
What's your argument against that then? When they say, oh, but he didn't know that the opposition player was there.
Well, the argument against it is very normal and very sensible. You're supposed to know that he's there.
Right.
You're supposed to know, it's part of the game. And if you don't know he's there, you've put yourself in trouble straight away. So it's all on Joe Allen, this. All of it is on Joe Allen. But clearly, officials seem to think that's not the case.
All the talk, as it always seems to be with Wales over the last few years, has been about Gareth Bale. This is what the Welsh coach Robert Page had to say about this star man.
Yeah, Gareth Bale, he's a big player for Wales. And big matches, he always delivers for us. And he did against Austria with 2 goals. And he's done it tonight again with another free kick. So when you know you've got somebody with his quality and that in his armour, then he always poses a threat.
Always poses a threat, of course, when he's in a Welsh shirt. It is quite extraordinary when you compare and contrast his domestic form this season to that at international level. 5 goals in 13 appearances, 3 assists as well. Of course, just a 1 goal for Real Madrid. How do you feel, Don, when you see that?
Do you know, I know Robert Page quite well, Dan, and he's fortunate that he's got Gareth Bale, because he only sees him, you know, once every couple of months. Where I heard Ancelotti do an interview a couple of weeks back, and he talked about not picking Gareth Bale in big games, and Ancelotti said, and rightly so, he said, well, when I turn up for training on a Monday, Gareth Bale's not out in the grass. On a Tuesday, he's not on the grass. He went Wednesday, he's swimming or he's on the bike. Thursday, he's not on the grass. Friday, he has a little sort of 7-a-side. I can't pick him. Where Robert Page has got the luxury, because he's a world-class player for Wales, he can more or less say to Gareth Bale, don't worry about training. Don't worry about me giving you a schedule. You tell me what you want to do. You tell the analysis guys and the coaching guys what you want to do. Is it swimming? Is it on the bike? Do you want to rest? Tell me when you feel ready to play close to 90 minutes. I think you've done 85 tonight. Tell me when we can get the best out of you, because it's pointless training Gareth Bale every single day, because he then won't be match fit, or he won't sort of last 90 minutes. He'll take a knock and he won't be fit. So Robert Page is a smart man, and he's just putting it on the player, just saying, listen, you tell me your experience. You know you want to play in the very biggest of games, and what chances have we got with you at getting to a World Cup? You tell us when you want to train. So he's got that luxury where Carlo Ancelotti hasn't. And I think he's using it quite well, Robert Page. It's really, really good man management.
It's a completely different thing, international football to club football. And Gareth Bale is not the first and won't be the last guy who won't be playing with his club team, but will play international football. You know, international managers will always rely on the people that have produced for them. And that's why Gareth Bale, number one, is always playing. But number two, we can't kid ourselves. It's unfortunate that the last 2.5, 3 years maybe, Gareth Bale has made us question his motives for playing in Madrid. And unfortunately, it's carried through now as far as we're concerned to the international field. But Gareth Bale, for what he's done for Wales over his career, absolutely has earned the right to turn up for Wales and say, I need to do the bike today, or I won't be on the grass today. The complete opposite of what Angelotti's saying. He has earned that right. And Robert Page knows from previous experience, when Gareth Bale has done that for Wales, he has produced. So you're never going to question it.
As a former professional, is it hard to swallow the contrast in his domestic form compared to international?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think we tend to forget, how difficult it is and how privileged we are to be, number one, to play professional football, but number two, to be so good that you're playing right at the very top for a decade or more. And so, for somebody who has struggled to maybe even turn professional or even get close to being it, even to get sat on a bench somewhere, when they look at Gareth Bale today and see him playing golf in Madrid and not playing and picking up a Champions League winner's medal for sitting on his backside, it is difficult to swallow.
Don?
I agree, but I think he's got to a stage in his career where I think his body's starting to let him down. And what I mean by that is, as I touched on before, he can't train like he did 5-10 years ago. So it's unfortunate that you're watching a Gareth Bale who can't train every single day. I've been there in my career, Dan, where you can't train every day. You're trying to manage your body. You're having injections. You're taking, you know, you're taking tablets. You're taking painkillers just to try and survive, just to try and get to match day. I think with Gareth Bale, there's something a little bit different in there. I'm not sure about his appetite and how much he ever really wanted to play for Real Madrid over the last 18 months. It felt a little bit sour, as Stevie said. The banner was just an absolute disaster. That was a PR disaster. And you can blame it on anyone else, but he knew what he was doing. But, you know, when you look at the sort of facts in the 9 years that he's been at Real Madrid, I mean, he's been an unbelievable player for them. The amount of trophies that he's won for them. I just think in his time, in his career, in his life now, he's leaning towards playing more international football than he is club football. The interesting thing will be where he goes at the start of next season, and can he go through a pre-season, and can he play the number of games leading up to November's World Cup? That's going to be fascinating, who takes him on and where he plays.
Well, that's it. And that leads us nicely into the next question. Gareth Bale obviously is now a free agent. There was speculation that maybe if they didn't make it to the World Cup, he was going to retire or come to MLS. What would you do, Stevie, if he rang you up and said, what should I do?
Go somewhere where you're going to play. That's the only... The problem is going to be, and I don't know Gareth Bale, but to me, looking from the outside, I think his biggest problem is going to be his ego.
Does he need to play?
Of course he needs to play.
But he hasn't played, has he? He hasn't played for Real Madrid. Is there any sort of world that we can live in where he can just train and get everything, get himself perfectly ready for November, as opposed to saying, signing for Cardiff, let's say, in the Championship, where you're going to play, but you're going to get kicked, you're going to have to train hard, your body is going to be on the line every single time you step across the line.
He's 32, by the way. Let's not forget, he's 32.
Yeah.
We're not talking about a 36 or a 37-year-old. Yeah. So there's plenty of them still playing at the top, by the way.
Right.
Particularly Benzema at his club.
Yes.
Every single thing about being a professional player, regardless of what it is, the answer to that question, or the sensible one, would be yes.
Right.
You have to play. You have to train. You have to work hard. You have to get your body in condition to play. But right now, every single thing he's doing that everybody would say is wrong... it's working for him and for Wales.
Right.
So it's difficult to argue because that'll be thrown straight in your face. Well, he's not doing it now, but guess what? He's a superstar for Wales. But yes, he has to go and he has to play. And as I said, the problem is his ego. Will his ego let him go to Cardiff? Just forget what league it is. Just get playing because the end goal is the World Cup. But if his ego gets in the way... And he wants to be in the Premier League, then he might end up doing the same as he's been doing, just training every day and sitting in his backside.
Would you want him?
If I'm Cardiff, yeah. Not if I'm in the Premier League, no.
No, not at all.
Well, there's nothing. Why would you? He's played 20 minutes for Real Madrid this year, something stupid like that. He went to Tottenham and Halle kicked the ball. So what is there to suggest that anything's going to change in the Premier League? Regardless of what team it is.
People will throw at you that he went to Spurs and he did score goals. He did get on the score sheet.
Well, I do
believe... He did contribute.
I do, yeah, he did contribute. Can you tell me who they were against?
Yeah, that's... yeah.
I mean, was it the fourth goal in a 4-0 win? Or was it an FA Cup against Marine?
Yeah.
So, I mean, seriously, no.
Yeah.
No, you're not putting your reputation as a manager on the line for a guy who you have no idea whether he's going to actually be able to play any games.
What do you do, Don?
What, if you Gareth Bale?
Yeah.
Don't go into the Championship. Do not go into the Championship. I was in the Championship when I was 25 and I loved it because it's Saturday, Tuesday. It's relentless. His body at 32 is not built for the Championship anymore. I heard Stevie saying there about 32, but there's a lot of mileage in Gareth Bale where you can get someone like, you know, Benzema, who looks after himself and has been injury-free, where his age is like a 32-year-old, 31-year-old, where Gareth Bale's 32, but he's also got the body and the legs and the knees, ankles of a 35-year-old. He can't go into the Championship. So what Gareth Bale's got to do, he's got to have the conversation with the manager, like I said before, who, when you speak to the manager, if you're Gareth Bale, you've got to be upfront and honest and say to that manager, listen, there's going to be days where I cannot train. I literally can't.
So if we're not going Championship, we're going Premier League, then, Don. And basically, if you're a manager...
If you think of what Christian Eriksen's done for Brentford, I can see a scenario like that. I can see if you've got a good manager like Thomas Frank who trusts Christian Eriksen, who they've worked together before, and they've got that relationship. Has Gareth Bale got that
different
relationship to a manager in the Premier League? Where, I know, but the reputation and... What I'm trying to say is if Gareth Bale can have the conversation with the manager and say to the manager, I will come and sign for you, but you're going to have to trust me. There's going to be days where I can't train. I want to train, but I can't train. But I will be there on a Saturday for you. I can play match days. I can't train 4 or 5 days a week. He's got to find that relationship. And there's not going to be many managers that will buy that, unfortunately. But
added to that, Donald, isn't there an issue as well? You're only really getting him for 3 months.
True, exactly. And then everything then comes into it. How much does he want? Is he going to take a pay cut on his wages? Will he go into the Championship? And will he play for Cardiff? Well, I think that's a team that he supports, but go on about 10 grand a week, 20 grand a week. I don't know. I don't know what he's thinking. You know, it might be the best thing for Gareth Bale to go MLS for 2 or 3 months or stay in Spain and have the sun on your back and try and have some good living. And as you said, Dan, Gareth Bale at the moment is a contradiction because everything about what me and Stevie know about the game is you've got to be fit, you've got to train. There's no way you can play in a World Cup if you're not playing. Gareth Bale's proved that not playing at Real Madrid and still keeping fit for Wales, for him, is the best thing to do. It's hard to take, it's hard for me and Stevie to probably understand, but for his body, it sort of works.
We could talk all day and it wouldn't make any sense.
What, we've been doing that for 12 years?
Well, that's probably a normal show, right?
That is standard.
It's a complete anomaly.
So Group B is complete then. It will be Wales, the US, Iran and England. Can Wales get out of that group, Don?
I think they can. I mean, I wouldn't underestimate Iran. I must admit, I need to do some homework on Iran, but their rankings is not too bad. But I would say it's between Wales and America, who goes through behind England.
Yeah, I can't argue with that, yeah. I can see them drawing with England. Classic British Isles get after each other. Iran, I'm a bit like Don, I don't know an awful lot about them, but United States, they can beat the United States. So yeah, they've got a chance.
For a lot more on the US, of course. We got the World Cup playoffs. Here's what's happening then over the next few days. United Arab Emirates taking on Australia. The winner of that tie will then take on Peru. Meanwhile, it's Costa Rica against New Zealand for a place in the World Cup in November.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's talk a bit of Chelsea now. Of course, the last season you felt that they still didn't quite know who the first choice front three were. Of course, the goals spread out across quite a few of the players. For more on this, Don is still with us, and we welcome Gab Marcotti, but it is a very special moment, as it seems like a very long time since we've broken out the Gabometer, but we feel it's that time of the year, Gab. And we're going to give us the number out of 10, the likelihood these players are to leave Chelsea. Let's start, shall we, with Romelu Lukaku.
I'm going to go 4 on this, and the number is rising. Now, as ever with the Gabometer, I take no responsibility for this because, frankly, it's still very early with Chelsea. The new owners have just come in. It's unclear whether some of the senior executives, like Marina Granovskaya, are still going to be around. But I always felt it was going to be really difficult for Chelsea to shift Lukaku this summer, simply because they paid a ton of money for him a year ago. Doesn't have that much of a market, also because his wages are frankly enormous. But there was an indication, of course, last week with his lawyer meeting Inter, and it was just an informational discussion about the possibility of him maybe taking a pay cut for a year, maybe going somewhere on loan, taking some of the burden off Chelsea. Now that, if he is open to that, it may not be Inter, maybe somebody else. And if Thomas Tuchel says, no, I'm done with Lukaku, obviously he wants to play. So that's why I'm coming at a 4. I still think it's going to be difficult.
Next up, Gab, Christian Pulisic.
I've gone with a 3 on this one. I think by all accounts, Tuchel likes Pulisic, but again, you've got that front three. You've got 3 slots in the front three, and 2 of them are almost automatic choices for Mount and Havertz. There's a lot of competition, of course, for that other spot in the front three. At some point, Pulisic may ask himself, do I want to play regularly? And if he does, might it need to be somewhere else? And I think in Pulisic's case, because he's young, he's somebody who I think would have a market. I think Chelsea know that they could get some money back for him. And he may even agree to take a step back and maybe sacrifice a little bit in terms of wages for more opportunity. But this would have to be down to him. Otherwise, from Chelsea's perspective, I think there's other players they would rather shift first.
Timo Werner.
So I've gone with a 3 here, and this is, I think obviously the thing with Werner is, I think Chelsea would probably happily move him on. The issue again, Werner is one of Chelsea's higher earners. They spend a lot of money on him, and he hasn't been that effective. You know, he's certainly not for lack of efforts, but the goals aren't there. And I think he's also having a bit of a rough time, as you saw the other night with Germany. I think it's very difficult to shift him. And I think from Tuchel's perspective, you know, rather than an unknown with Werner on the pitch, you know, you might not get finishing, but you know you're going to get a shift.
Hakim Ziyech.
I've gone higher with Ziyech. I've gone with a 6 here. The thing with Ziyech is his natural position is either in the hole or starting out on the wing and cutting inside. He's not going to play in the hole because Mason Mount is there. Starting out wide and coming inside, well, Chelsea don't play with wingers. So, you know, he's been there a while now. I think he's generally been good when he has played, but the minutes have been hard to come by. Again, he's somebody I think, whether on loan or whether more likely on loan or possibly permanent move, I think if he decides, you know, I want to get on the pitch, I want to contribute, I think he's somebody who could make a loan deal happen, and I think there definitely would be a market for him.
Jorginho.
I've gone 6 on this one. There was a ton of buzz about him going back to Serie A. That buzz is still there to some degree. Again, it would have to be something where, you know, it would be on the terms of the clubs that were going to sign him. I think the difficulty for Chelsea is we know that, you know, they're going to have to bring in most likely 2 central defenders to go and somehow you know, replace Christensen and Rudiger. I think they definitely need a midfielder as well because N'Golo Kante keeps getting injured. Ruben Loftus-Cheek likely to be on his way on loan. So in the end, I'm not 100% they're going to find a home for him because he does have a big wage. And because from his perspective, you know, he can sit tight and count on the fact that There's really nobody else that does what he does on the team. Unless Billy Gilmore comes back, has a tremendous preseason, and you know turns into the player that Chelsea hope he will be one day.
Kepa, Aretha Balaga.
I've got a bit higher here. I run to a 7. Look, he's got a contract until 2025. He hasn't been a starter for 2 seasons. He signed this incredible 7-year deal when he arrived. He knows his future is taken care of financially. He was close to moving on loan, if you remember, in 2021. I think at some point, this guy wants to play. I think he's 28 years old now. He's in the prime of his career. He certainly has the skills to start for most teams. Edouard Mendy is the undisputed number one between the sticks. I think he's somebody that, you know, he would have to ask for a move, but if he does, I think Chelsea would be very happy loaning him out. Probably a loan, again, rather than a permanent move, would be one of those loans plus obligation, plus option to buy later on. Something like that. I could see this happening.
Let's change things around for the final one, Gab. You mentioned, of course, Chelsea needs some defenders. The possibility of Koundé coming in. The higher the number, the more likely it is.
Yeah, I've gone 7 on this. I would have been even higher until, of course, Sevilla sold Diego Carlos. You know, it's rare that clubs sell both their starting center backs in the same transfer window. But the reality is Chelsea were very close to signing him before. Obviously, there's new owners at Sevilla that may impact things a little bit. But he's got a big season coming up in the French national team. Chelsea want a center back with his characteristics, a smaller, mobile center back in the back three. Again, you look at Chelsea's defense, right now we're talking, you know, Azpilicueta's out of contract, touch and go if he stays or leaves. Then you have Thiago Silva, who's 36, and then you get into to Chalobah, people like that, maybe Ethan Ampadu coming back, who knows? So, you know, they need established players in there. And Jules Koundé is somebody who they've been really tracking for a very, very long time. And I think they're going to do everything they can to bring him over the line this summer.
Wow, the Gabometer back with a bang. Don, I think this is your first ever live experience of the Gabometer. How was it for you?
It is. It was a bit slow at the start. It was a couple of threes that I thought might have been slightly higher. I've seen Lukaku. Gab had Lukaku down as a 3, but then saying that his representatives have been meeting clubs in Italy, and if I'm Thomas Tuchel, I'm absolutely fuming if I'm seeing this. So it's up to Tuchel to say, what are you doing? Because we're not selling you, and if we're not selling you, well, you're going to stay and fight for your place. I'm not hearing too much noise from Thomas Tuchel, so that says to me that Chelsea are quite willing to maybe go on, off your pop, same as Christian Pulisic, and maybe, and it's a shame because I think Timo Werner is so likeable and so honest. I don't think it's going to happen for him at Chelsea. I just don't.
Why did you pull a face when he said Timo Werner's likeable and honest, Gab?
No. Nobody's ever going to doubt his effort. I just want to reiterate here, this isn't a list of who Tuchel likes and doesn't like and whatever else. And it's a list of what you can realistically do. Because I've been saying this for years. We're in a situation where the top 10 or 12 clubs, they pay such high wages that it's extremely difficult for them to move players on. And so either players take pay cuts or clubs have to subsidize them when they go, which they generally don't like doing. So this is an assessment, I think, of what I think is realistic and what the chances are, not just a list of whether Tuchel likes these players or not. And by the way, I'll guarantee you 100% that if Lukaku's representative met with other clubs, he had the thumbs up from Chelsea to go and do that.
You all right?
I'm just not enough.
Stevie, don't disrespect the Gabometer. What's wrong with you?
It's Sunday and it's the weekend. I'm not probably concentrating the way I should.
I don't really know where you're going with that. Wow.
But the sounds of it, between Don and Gab, Chelsea will have no players left for the start of the season.
Right. Well, they can bring in Koundé, aren't they? Koundé's going to come in.
All right, so that's the other 6. Who's going to replace them?
There we go. A lot more from Gab and possible transfer movements on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which, of course, will drop on Monday. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. So it finishes Czech Republic 2, Spain 2. Let's just take a look then at how Ligue 1 Group 2 stands after the first round of, or the second round of results, in fact. Portugal and Czech Republic on 4 points apiece, Spain on 2, Switzerland at the bottom with 0. For more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Gemma Soler to the show. Gemma, I don't mean to be negative, but I'm going to start off with a slightly negative question, given what we were discussing on yesterday's show. Does anyone in Spain care about this game?
Well, yes, of course. Hola. It's Sunday, so we don't have leagues or any other thing anymore. So, of course, in Spain, everyone watched Rafa Nadal win the 14th Roland Garros, and then they watch Spain. There is a lot of criticism surrounding Luis Enrique. He's not the most popular coach in Spain, probably. So they criticize a lot with the players he picked, and it does. Wasn't a great game, and it's the second draw in a row. They conceded a late goal against Portugal, and today again they were weak in defense, and I think that's the main problem of this team. They are so vulnerable in defense. We saw it in that second goal, and then we saw the possession, 79%, but they don't. They cannot make any danger. They don't have a top scorer, so they don't have a killer there. And so it's they need to work better and improve the pressure because they're having so much trouble in that area, I think.
What's the biggest frustration with Luis Enrique? Who do the fans want in? Who is he not selecting?
Well, one of the names was Thiago Alcantara. He already put him in the list, but he had some problems with his foot, so he had to go. They asked more Real Madrid players. They asked for Nacho, for example. He took Carvajal and Asensio this time, but not in the other games that they already played. And it has to do as well with the way they play. It's a very Barcelona way of playing, and not everyone in Spain that likes this touch and this kind of football. So there's criticism in this. And I think for Spain, the best news is that Gavi, he's such an important player, this 17-year-old. He's important at Barcelona. He's very important in Spain. And Marco Asensio, he came from the bench and he was refreshing for that half an hour. So this would be the only good news for Spain, and that late goal that gave them one point, because a defeat would put them very complicated for next game in Switzerland.
Gavi, of course, one of the highlights of Barcelona's season, and Barcelona have been hitting the headlines a lot over the last few days, given their speculation and that link to Robert Lewandowski. Well, this is what Javier Tebas, La Liga president, had to say about it. They know what they have to do, sell assets and earn more. Today, they cannot sign Lewandowski. Gerard Laporta hit back and said, I would ask him to abstain from making comments like that. I don't know if he makes these statements voluntarily or involuntarily, but if he makes them voluntarily, it is a clear sign he wants to harm Barca's interests. Eduard Romeo, Barca's vice president of the Department of Finance, doubling down on that, saying Tebas looked the other way when Barca was being driven to financial ruin. This man is co-responsible for the situation that Barca is going through. He said amen to everything that went against Barca. Tebas responded, saying, we've already explained the situation in detail to Mr. Romeo. Either he hasn't understood a thing, or it's more profitable and popular to call out La Liga as a trump card in every statement. Gemma, this is pretty embarrassing, isn't it?
There's a name for that, and the name is Super League. That's why they are fighting each other, and it's quite I don't know what word to use to define how the president of La Liga can have such a bad relationship with both the two top teams in Spain, Real Madrid and Barcelona. But saying that Javier Tebas is responsible for Barça financial situation, of course, that you cannot say that, because Tebas is not responsible, but management, it has been in a bad management that it's coming from a long time ago. I would say when they signed Neymar and when they start doing that crazy contract, that locker room knew the numbers and they asked for more salary, and now we are at a point where Barcelona, that didn't win any kind of trophy this season, they have the biggest salary in all Europe, 560,000 euros. So that's something crazy. They have to work on that. They need to sell assets. Probably what Barcelona would have to do probably is to try to balance the book, to fix the situation, and maybe stay 2 years low profile without signing and trying to put the books together and to be back on the market. But of course, this is a club of the members vote, and you cannot do that. President Laporta cannot do that. And after a year without a win, and also a year that Real Madrid beat her rivals, won the Champions League and the La Liga. So it's a big mess, and Barcelona is in a you can be at a win-win situation. Well, Barcelona is a lose-lose situation, because they need to sell. All Europe knows that. They won't be making that much money in any player. They need to decide and they need to try to fix that relationship with La Liga. Otherwise, they will have no margin to try to negotiate and to focus on their number one goal, that is Robert Lewandowski, and number two is Marcos Alonso. But right now, they are not even able to register the players they have already agreed, Kessié and Christensen.
How much have they learnt their lesson from what happened last summer? Obviously thinking, we'll get the Messi deal done somehow. We know how that ended. Looking at this Lewandowski deal, it feels almost you've got the same sort of taste.
Yeah. And this, you see this new board of members of Joan Laporta, they criticize a lot what the previous ones did. The previous ones, Bartomeu and Sandro Rosell, did an absolute mess during 10 years. But I think they are some kind doing the same mistakes because of the same thing, because they are an elected board of members and they need to keep that. But they are doing the same. They are talking with Lewandowski. They are coming into the press saying, yeah, we will sit in the table with the top players. They tried to pursue the Haaland signing. Barcelona cannot afford this right now. And you just need to look at the salaries and the situation, and really they are desperate, trying to that the players have a pay cuts, and they are not doing well, and all being done public, it makes it even more embarrassing, as you mentioned, Dan. It's really a very complicated situation for Barcelona after not having won anything this season. Desperate. Xavi is really annoyed by this situation. We've been told that he's really worried because he asked for some a striker, a defender, and he's worried that he will be not having what he needs for the team being back to being a competitive team.
Gemma Solera, as always, thank you very much. Keep up to date with all the latest transfer news regarding the ins and outs at not only Barcelona, but the rest of the big clubs from around the world. Be sure to click on Transfer Talk over on the website.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRICEbikes.com.
US in action today as the men took on Uruguay and finished 0-0 in Kansas City. Casey Keller joins us. Casey, we asked what highlights we should put of this game for you, and your answer was...
None. There wasn't a whole lot. So one of those, it looked like one of those games where both managers had just played a game a few days earlier and elected to make some changes, look at some players, change some formations, and kind of see how it all worked out. And yeah, I mean, there was aspects of the game that I think Greg Berhalter will be happy with. I mean, it was a decent Uruguay team, particularly when they made changes in the second half. His team hung on. There was a few times when probably Uruguay probably should have scored. There was a couple decent chances, particularly in the first half, for the U.S. as well. But in the end, it really didn't have any real cutting edge for either team. And, you know, I think the coaches are going to struggle, both coaches, to really get a good read on that performance.
Twitter. Get off Twitter. Casey, if I have a little scan there. Joe Scally's been getting a lot of abuse. Why?
I'm not really sure. I mean, some of it he's trying to be aggressive and they're coming in behind him a little bit. But I think one of the tricky parts about this lineup, if you're an outside back, is... look how narrow at times McKinney, Adams, and Musa are. And then you're asking Pulisic to track the outside back or an outside wing back if he comes on an overlap. And so at times, I think depending on who that outside back was in both these matches, has been exposed. He's tracked with a player inside. And then as an overlapping player comes, you're then expected to be in an outside position as well. So... it's going to be interesting to see how Greg Berhalter looks at that going forward, because that front three are going to be very mobile. They're not going to be necessarily positional. And then that midfield will be very narrow. So when a team can quickly change play, it's asking a whole lot of your outside backs.
Meanwhile, as we've discussed earlier on in the show, the lineup is complete for Group B with Wales joining England, Iran, and... the US of A. Are you happy with Wales, Casey?
Yeah, I don't think any of the three sides in that playoff were anything to be scared of. It's a great draw for the US, no question about it. And it gives them a really good chance regardless of who's coming through. I mean, I think a lot of the conversation was about if Ukraine had gone through, you know, the kind of the emotional favorites that they would have been for the tournament. And okay, they came up short. Wales got themselves back into a World Cup for the first time since 58, which is a good story in itself if they hadn't have been going up against Ukraine. So I think either way, the U.S. has to be very happy with the group that they're in and their opportunity to go through to the next round.
Casey Keller, that is it. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Just a reminder, the U.S. Summer Tour continues this Friday as they take on Grenada in the Nations League. You can check out that game. Coverage starts at 9:30. Kickoff is at 10 on ESPN+. Speaking of ESPN Plus, Football Americas drops on Monday for more reaction to that 0-0 draw against Uruguay.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
That is it. That brings the end of today's show.
Already?
Already, Stephen? Fear not, though. Next. Don and Gab will be back.
I thought you said we were done.
An eclectic episode.
Get your mind up.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Stevie with us here in the studio. Don and Gab. Don and Gab, I have to tell you, Stevie's a little bit on edge. He's got the dentist tomorrow. Nervous. Ooh. Doesn't like it.
Wow.
Oh, no. I'm getting the crown as well.
Same. Oh, no. Same. That'd be cheap.
Petrified.
You know what? I'm scared of the drill mill and the money right now.
Really, Steve? Are you that bad with it?
Oh, I hate it. Well, Dan, when I grew up, going to the dentist was like, you'd rather go to jail.
Flipping heck.
I mean, talk about getting butchered.
What do they do to you?
You should get gas and all that nonsense.
Well, surely that helps, doesn't it? Doesn't that calm everything down a bit?
Oh, yes. You know when you wake up?
Right.
Well, number one, you're lucky you wake up. And two, you don't know what day of the week it is. You're all over the shop.
Look at Gab's face.
Stevie, I would have thought, this is what I don't understand about dentists, and it's a common thing, right? Few people are like, yes, I'm going to the dentist. I don't understand why. Dentists are there to take care of your teeth and make your teeth better if you've got a problem, right?
No.
And yet, nobody seems to like dentists, whereas everybody seems to love doctors. I don't quite get the dichotomy there.
Who loves doctors?
But you wouldn't be as apprehensive if you were going to see the doctor.
Well, I wouldn't be scared because the doctor's not got some electrical equipment and wants to touch my body with, like,
What dentist have you been to?
What dentist have you gone to?
What dentist has he gone to? Oh, no! I'm going to the doctor. That stethoscope. It's so cool.
The what?
Stethoscope. It's so cold. I can't stand it.
Right.
Yeah, right. Oh, some big drill stuck right down your gob. Yeah, thanks.
Are you working tomorrow?
No.
Oh, well, good, you have some rest.
Well, I can't. I need time to recover.
Don, how many international goals would Messi have by now had he played in these Farmers World Cup qualifying games?
Oh, I hate these sort of questions. I mean, who did they play? Who did they play tonight when he scored five?
Estonia.
I hate these questions. Exactly. There you go.
Well, so
no more.
He would have scored a lot more, though, yeah, if he's in World Cup qualifying, Don, in Europe.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, people say, you know, oh, he's playing against Colombia and Brazil and it's difficult, which it is, but I don't think you can measure anyone's numbers by, you know.
I think you can, Don. I think you really can on this occasion, can't you? Yeah. If you're at CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying, you're up against, you know, some of the best in the world every round, as opposed to in Europe. Look at it.
Group B, Argentina, Gibraltar, the Faroe Islands, and
Scotland.
And Scotland. Guaranteed goals.
Listen, man, he's a genius. He scores five.
Oh, that's it. That's it. End of Gab, on this occasion, the Messi lovers might actually be right, aren't they?
I think this applies to every South American player. I mean, if you think about it, every four-year cycle, they have to play 18 games against... I mean, it used to be Bolivia were bad, but then you go play Bolivia at altitude and you can't breathe. It used to be Venezuela were terrible, but they're not terrible anymore. You compare it to Europe, yeah, they have a point, because every two-year cycle, you're either qualifying for the Euros or you're qualifying for the World Cup, and... You know, odds are you will get one San Marino, Liechtenstein, Gibraltar type team in your group, and you get to play them twice. And then you'll get another team that are a level up from that, you know, whether it's Estonia or whatever. So you could argue that, you know, over a four-year cycle, you have a guaranteed, eight games against teams that are substantially worse than what you would face in South America. On top of that, most times... In South American qualifying, when they do and play friendlies, and obviously this was a friendly, they don't go and play Estonia. Traditionally, they go and try to play prestige friendlies if they can schedule them, so that they can make money off them. So they go and they play tough teams, and this applies to Brazil, Argentina, whatever. So I think it is generally fair to say that it is harder to rack up really big numbers in South America.
To Gab, is Mourinho going to PSG?
Well, apparently, somebody very close, this is kind of funny, right? So the story comes out on Saturday. It's reported in the Telegraph. People, I guess, putting 2 + 2 together. Luis Campos on his way to taking over. He's Portuguese. Oh, look, so's Mourinho. On top of that, it was reported by somebody who's been very close to Mourinho in the past. That's on Saturday. Then on Sunday, in the Times, rival newspaper, Duncan Castles, who's historically very close to the Mourinho camp, says, no. Mourinho would turn down any offer from Paris Saint-Germain because he's so happy at Roma and he just won the conference and he's building something there. My instinct is that I think this was a 24-hour story. I think Mourinho genuinely wants to make it work at Roma. Doesn't mean he might not consider Paris Saint-Germain at some point, but I'm also not 100% sure that Paris Saint-Germain would necessarily come running for him. Not because he's necessarily a bad manager, before the Mourinho-holics have a go at me, or the Mourinho-iacs, or whatever you want to call them, but simply because when you have a team with Messi, Neymar, Mbappe now, you're going to want to consult these guys. Hey, do you want Mourinho? And they may not want Mourinho, especially given the histories.
Stevie, do you have a part-time gig that helps you pay for all these cakes and haircuts? Don, in case you missed yesterday's extra time, Stevie revealed what he paid for a cake for his granddaughter. Have a guess. What are you going for?
Is it a little cupcake or is it a sort of medium?
How big a cake are we talking, Stevie? Like a dinner plate size?
It's a good size cake.
Good size cake.
So a good size cake Stevie would pay for his granddaughter. I'm saying $50.
Times that by four.
What? And you paid it.
That's what I said.
And you paid it.
That's what I said when it had already been paid. What?
What?
And Stevie doesn't even like cake.
Had a bit of this one.
Hey.
And you paid it.
Yeah.
Did you take pictures at least?
Aye. Of course I did.
You know what you should do, Stevie?
Wow.
For that kind of investment, you should have taken pictures of the cake, turned it into an NFT, a non-fungible token, and then I'm sure it would appreciate in value over the years, and you'd have something to show for your $200.
There you are, Stevie.
Yeah, I thought you knew me better than that.
Stevie is very sceptical about NFTs.
He's got no idea what an NFT is.
As if I'd ever be like, I can barely turn that on. Come on, jeez.
Why does the media buy into the hype around various national teams' golden generations? When was the last time, Gab, the term was used for a team that actually lived up to it after the fact?
I mean, it's still a golden generation, even if they don't win anything, right? I'm thinking most recently, obviously, Portugal's golden generation. They reached the final of the Euros in 2004. Belgium, obviously, is the other one that often gets talked about. But, yeah, when you have a group of world-class players who are all roughly the same age, when they all come through around the same time, why wouldn't you call them a golden generation? I mean, is it marketing? Is it just the terms we use? I mean, the class of the class of 93 at all, or Trigger, was it class of 93? 90, well, whatever. The Scholes, Beckham, Neville, that whole group, right? Nicky Butt. 92, there we go. We could have called them the golden generation, but we didn't. It would still be a golden generation, right? I don't see what the big deal is, right?
Was Stevie part of the golden generation of Scotland, Don?
Oh, absolutely. Who are you playing with, Stevie? Who's the legends? Alan Hansen, Kenny Dalglish?
Hansen, Dalglish.
Yeah.
But they're all older.
Souness. Molly Miller,
Ben Gallagher. It still can be
a
golden generation, though, can't it?
Say that again.
It can still be a golden generation.
Leach is 10 years older than you.
I thought I said one at a time.
You have to be of the same generation, Don.
No, you don't. You just have to be in the same team and the same squad. It's not like an age thing, is it?
What are you talking about? Of course it is. If it's a generation, you have to be roughly the same age. Otherwise, it makes no sense. Otherwise, you could be part of Liverpool's golden generation with Russian Souness too, right? You were there, right?
Well, no, you know, because I didn't play with Graham Souness. I played with Ian Rush, but I didn't play with Graham Souness or Kenny Dalglish. So,
okay,
Stevie's
so you're
point,
part of the Ian Rush
Hansen.
Generation, are you?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but they're older.
But Stevie's mentioning legends there. Dalglish.
They're all legends, but
Hansen.
They're older than he is.
It's still golden. It's still golden. Just take generation off and put golden in there. That's it.
Oh, God.
Done. Are you and Stevie of the same generation?
Yeah, me and him are identical twins. He just doesn't know it yet.
There you go. Yeah. With Scotland, Italy, and now Ukraine out of qualification, which teams will you all be rooting for in the World Cup and why? Oh, good start. Okay, Stevie, we know you'll be rooting for anyone that's playing against England.
Correct.
Where do you stand on the support of the US men's national team?
No, I'd like to see them doing well. Yeah. Yeah, I'll probably go with my usual, though.
Who's your usual?
Brazil. I always like Brazil.
Yeah.
The World Cup is just... If somebody mentions the name World Cup...
Right.
The first thing that comes to your head, other than Scotland, for me, is Brazil.
But there has been a member of the Brazil team, the captain of the Brazil team, that you haven't been very complimentary of over the years.
But what has that got to do with the whole squad?
Because I don't know where you would stand on seeing him be successful.
Well, I'm not that petty that I'd rather they went down the toilet just because of one guy whose character I believe sometimes is questionable.
Okay.
Sharon, that's the answer you're getting.
Don?
This goes slightly against the grain because I will always, and I'll always champion Maradona as being the best player of all time. But I wouldn't mind Argentina winning the World Cup and Messi winning a World Cup.
Yeah.
I think for him, that would be pretty amazing.
Gab?
So I'm not going to go and support a team that's already won a World Cup for obvious reasons. I will probably support whoever's playing against Germany. That will generally be my first port of call, again, for obvious reasons. Beyond that, I don't know. I want to keep an open mind. I often go and support places where I've lived or if there's people who I know who are involved in teams. But, you know, you have until November to impress me. But I will be supporting whoever's playing against Germany.
Obviously. Yeah, but I think... I can only talk for myself, but I think what generally happens with me as well is, like the Euros with Italy, I wanted Italy to win the Euros.
Right.
Obviously because England were involved.
Yes.
But generally there's a team that appears that grabs you and you enjoy watching them and the games are good and they score goals.
Yep.
So when the tournament starts, there'll probably be another team that I'll probably root for.
I like that. You and Gab just waiting to be impressed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For all, well, we discussed this on the show, Gab. You weren't in this segment. Should any club go near Gareth Bale for even 3 months, given he will not want to play for fear of getting injured before the World Cup?
I mean, all right, he doesn't want to play because he doesn't want to get injured. So what, he just sits for 3 months and just plays for Wales? That's not the best way to prepare for the World Cup.
But, Gav, as we said on the show, that's exactly what he's been doing at Real Madrid for the last couple of seasons.
Right, but now it's different. Now he's going to have to sign a contract. I think he probably would have liked to. Look, obviously at the end there wasn't any love there, but I'm sure he would have liked to have played more for Real Madrid just to keep his fitness for Wales. Obviously you'd want to have a long talk with him and figure out what do you want to do if we give you a multi-year contract. Are you going to want to keep playing? Are you going to be happy? What's the best way to protect you? Obviously the World Cup is going to be your priority. I can understand that. I can respect that. But... You know, there's a whole second half of the season after the World Cup. Mm. So I think clubs will talk to him, but they're going to want to sign him on their terms. And I think he understands that. And I've turned it around a bit on Gareth Bale. Look, the guy's made so much money from Real Madrid that right now I mean, he could play for free if he wanted to. He could go, but what I mean by that is he can choose the club that best suits him, and money doesn't need to come into it at all. That's a pretty strong position to be in.
And also, we discussed this as well during the show, it could be the fact that he just doesn't have a club and just prepares himself on his own to go and play for Wales, Gav. I'm just thinking, historically, you know these things better than anyone. Has that ever happened, where you've had a big star at an international side that hasn't got any allegiance to any club?
I mean, I think it's happened with Pat Jennings, if I'm not mistaken, but I think he might have just been close to retirement. Obviously, Zidane, when he played his last World Cup, his contract with Real Madrid had expired, but that's different because the season had just ended. I think there have been other guys who, I mean, certainly back in the day when, for example, with the U.S. national team, right? When they qualified for the World Cup in 1990, I think, and I believe in 94 as well, most of those guys were on central contracts with the U.S. Soccer Federation. They didn't play for clubs. They simply went and trained among and hung out with each other and trained by themselves. It's not a good position to be in, especially not a good position to be in when you're the only guy in that position and all your teammates are playing for their club side. So I genuinely don't think that's going to happen.
Final question, Don. Percentage chance Wales get out of their group?
I'm going 50-50 between them and America.
Oh, okay. Gav?
So, does that mean you give England 100% chance and Iran 0%?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay. I'm going to go 30% for Wales.
I'm kind of round, Gab. 33 and a third.
Oh.
Can't separate the other three.
What's worse, Stevie? England winning the World Cup or going to the dentist every day for a month?
Oh, my days.
Oh, that's close. I mean, ultimately, I'm going to say I don't want to go to the dentist.
Right. Wow, you really hate the dentist.
And then if it actually came to that, it would be. That would be a. That'd be a last-ditch decision.
Wow. That is it. We're done. Be a big brave boy tomorrow, Stevie. Maybe get a sticker. Sugar-free lollipop.
Yeah, do it.
We'll be back tomorrow for more reaction to Wales booking a place in the World Cup.
I'll get a bill. I know that.
Yeah, definitely. Blooming neck. Be more than a cake.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.